Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday afternoon. Our guest this hour is the author of Winning Marriage, the inside story of how same-sex couples took on the politicians and pundits and won. Mark Solomon is our guest. Mark is the National Campaign Director for Freedom to Marry. He's worked on marriage equality for 13 years, leading campaigns in Massachusetts, also playing key roles in New York, Illinois, California, Washington, Minnesota, New Hampshire, Maine, and other places. He is a graduate of Yale and the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. And what's remarkable is how in 2005, people who were in support of marriage equality were facing this huge uphill battle, and it took work for 3.5 years to get Massachusetts to be the first place to grant marriage equality. And the strategists worked long and hard to figure out how to move this through the country, many would say, as rapidly as it has moved through. It would appear to me, maybe you'll take issue with this, that the Supreme Court is about to say that marriage equality will be the law of the land sometime in the year 2015. Mark writes about the legislators. He writes about how people get to know and need to know people who are same-sex couples and their families. He writes about people who are now supportive of marriage equality who didn't used to be. And he writes about taking on the Catholic Church, lawmakers in many of these states, and public opinion. And it all changed, and it changed pretty darn fast, didn't it? We're going to be welcoming phone calls for Mark. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Hi, Mark. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for writing the history. You must every day of your life now think about, oh my gosh, I can't believe what our goals were in 2005, and look at where we are. It is a remarkable story.
It's been quite a journey, and it started out slowly with one state that we were fighting our hardest to hold on to, and we have hit a turning point, and we're at a place now where the fight is now in places like Alabama and Texas,
right.
And that's a sign of lots of progress for sure.
Yeah, it is. I always like to find out why people do what it is they do, and I found your story really interesting. Your path, you write in the book, to becoming an activist for the freedom to marry was anything but a direct one. You can say that again.
Yeah, it's true. I've always been sort of a political junkie, I was involved in politics in high school and college, and then worked on Capitol Hill. But I was, as a Republican, I was involved, and worked on Capitol Hill for Jack Danforth from my home state of Missouri, and then as I came out a little bit later, when I was about 30 years old, and it was around that time that my ideology started to shift in a big way, and I got involved in the marriage fights. I was in Boston in graduate school, and I just decided that it seemed so right to me. This cause seemed so right, and it seemed so right to take what I knew, political organizing and strategy, and put it into this battle that was going on in Boston where I was living.
Mm-hmm. You say that the recognition that you were gay and desperately didn't want to be, that you were casting about for anything you could come up with to prove to yourself that you weren't really gay. So if you were a Republican, if you were a Ronald Reagan Republican, the embodiment of strength and toughness that would provide an antidote to what it was that you were and what you were dealing with then. I guess my question before we get into all the legislative battles is, do you think that that's still true for a lot of young people who are gay, that they have that kind of, they don't want to believe this about myself, or along with this marriage equality movement, has there been a movement for people to accept who they are and feel comfortable with it at much younger ages?
I think the world is a much different place today. people are coming out at younger and younger ages. To me, like the ultimate sign of of progress is that people, once young people realize that they are gay or lesbian, they can just say it and not. You know, that there really is no closet. You don't feel like you have to be in any sort of closet. But I still think that in lots, you know, in many parts of the country, there's plenty of bullying. There's all sorts of subtle messages and not so subtle messages. And it's still a journey for plenty of people, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. I found the personal stories in the book to be of extreme interest, and it wasn't all that long ago, I believe it was a part of that long Massachusetts campaign, that you were identifying same-sex couples, people who had been married, was it in Massachusetts, and trying to get them to speak before legislators and show them their families and that they were regular human beings because of a belief that a lot of legislators didn't know people who were married who were same-sex.
Yeah, absolutely. That was certainly at the heart of the Massachusetts fight, but honestly, it's been at the heart of every one of our fights on marriage. Is, we do fine in the urban, in urban centers and the sort of equivalents of, of Milwaukee and Madison. You know, those are places where lawmakers know plenty of gay folks. But then when you get into rural communities and sort of smaller working class communities, it's different. And there are lawmakers who they may know of someone who they know of as gay, but they don't know them as a couple, and they don't they haven't understood why marriage is important to them, why they want to get married. And changing that has been, and doing it in a very local way has been at the heart of our strategy.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of your opponents, and let's start with the Catholic Church. Ironically, in its own very severe, damaging sex scandal, pedophile priests, it was a horrible situation, and we're still living with the ramifications of that. But you had the Catholic hierarchy take you on in full measure.
For sure. So I started this work in Massachusetts, which is the state that has the second highest percentage of Catholics in the country. And, just to be super clear, Catholic individuals have always been stronger supporters than the average person on marriage equality. But the hierarchy was dead set against it, particularly under the earlier popes, John Paul and Benedict. And, when the decision came down for the first time in the country in Massachusetts, the Catholic hierarchy from the Vatican just went ballistic and, made every priest, preach from the pulpit, a couple Sundays after the decision that this was a national disgrace. And they sent, I remember the day they sent, literally a million letters they put in the mail to Catholic parishioners to their homes, urging them to contact their lawmakers. So they were all in, and it was it certainly in the early days it felt extremely daunting because there were so many people who would hear from their priest, hear from the hierarchy on a weekly basis, and a powerful organizing tool.
Mm-hmm. And to a lesser extent, you didn't really have much support from the African-American clergy either.
We didn't. And that was one of the real dichotomies. We've had generally, and pretty much across the board, great support from African-American lawmakers who really have viewed this as part of the civil rights trajectory that America has been on. But African-American clergy, especially in the earlier days, were just not with us. And, it was very difficult. It was hurtful, I think, to lots of people in our community, especially lots of African-American LGBT people, to see that, that some of the leading African-American clergy were against us.
Right. I was interested in, first, well, he wrote the foreword to your book and appears to me to be a thoroughly decent man, Deval Patrick, who was governor-elect, I believe, and somewhat naive on what it would take to have marriage equality in Massachusetts. But tell us the story of when he was governor-elect and how he gave early support but was naive about the issue initially.
Sure. So Deval Patrick was elected, and when he was elected in 2006, you know, the sitting governor was a fierce opponent, a guy who your listeners know named Mitt Romney.
Yes. And so
it was, we were going into one of our really most difficult votes at the very end of the year in 2006, and Deval Patrick had just been elected, and you know, I knew he was strongly supportive, or he had said he was strongly supportive during the campaign, but he, you know, he really went above and beyond by reaching out before he was sworn into office and calling me up and saying, "Mark, I want to help. How can I, you know, tell me everything I can do to help?" And then meeting me the next morning and going through a list of lawmakers, and you know, I was sitting with him in his in this little hideaway office that the Romney folks gave to him to use as his transition office. And and he was, you know, he was a little naive, I mean, because he was so new. And he, you know, he thought he could persuade some people who really weren't persuadable. And I was like, "Nah, you'll never get him." And, you know, Deval picked up the phone and called and said, "Oh, watch me." All the, you know, then he's like, "Yeah, yes, yes. Okay, I guess we'll agree to disagree on this one."
Right.
I was like, "All right." But, you know, the thing that was most important was that he was trying so hard. And,
yes.
And is an, as you said, is an incredibly decent man and very persuasive, a great listener, a great persuader, and so super helpful.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the stories that you tell about Mitt Romney's encounters with same-sex couples with children are incredibly insensitive. Feel free to tell some of those stories. I was amazed.
Yeah, he was really a, when it came to this issue, when it came to marriage, I mean, he was a vociferous opponent. It happened on his watch. I'm sure from his vantage point, he saw it as like the worst nightmare he could imagine, and that the decision happened just as he was starting to plot out a run for president. And so the first thing he did that was the first really sort of beyond the pale thing he did was he wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal that compared the marriage decision in Massachusetts to the Dred Scott decision.
Oh, my.
Just so, you know, now the Dred Scott decision was a ruling that said that slaves aren't citizens, aren't human beings. Mm. And, you know, he was like, Lincoln knew how wrong that decision was, and he stood up and fought against it, and I know how wrong this one is. You know, it was just, it was a horrible, awful comparison. So what we did is we sent, you know, our plaintiffs, there were seven plaintiffs in the case, they went and asked for a meeting with Governor Romney. They just showed up at his office. They'd been asking for a meeting for months, and he hadn't been willing to meet with them. They just showed up and started holding a press conference explaining how this their case was nothing like the Dred Scott case, and he finally invited them into his office because the press was starting to film them. And he was extraordinarily insensitive. I mean, the people who went into that meeting just were shocked at how cold and calculated and, you know, just no, complete lack of empathy, to the point where one of the lead plaintiffs said, "Well, what should I tell my 8-year-old daughter when, you know, when she learns that her governor doesn't support her mom's ability to get married?" And he said, "I don't care what you tell your 8-year-old daughter." And and then the woman broke into tears. So it was pretty harsh.
Well, I think he said, "Don't care what you tell your adopted daughter," right?
Oh, right, exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. You have the book in front of me. I know.
I know you probably wrote it longer ago than I've read it. So,
but, yes, exactly. And she wasn't adopted. In fact, one of the big issues in their case was that that the partner who wasn't giving birth couldn't get in to see Julie Goodrich, who was giving birth, and there were some complications, et cetera.
Hmm. So was that Mitt Romney being guided by the Mormon faith as well?
It's hard to know. I mean, it's hard to know what motivates an elected official, a politician. Presumably he's a dedicated Mormon, but who knows? I mean, he has evolved back and forth on lots of different positions. So I don't know what was driving, driving his, and it's certainly his coldness, is not something that is my experience in dealing with any person of faith, just
right.
Not being able to empathize, even if you disagree.
And there were so many who disagreed. You also mentioned John Kerry. He wasn't in favor of marriage equality.
That's exactly true. John Kerry was running for president, and I was broadcasting live on TV as the decision in Massachusetts came out. This New England cable news asked if I would come on live and give my reactions. And I remember, it was just one after the next, just sort of pretty tough opposition. And then, from the people you'd expect, like the Catholic hierarchy and the president at the time, George W. Bush and Romney, you expected them to be pretty tough. But, John Kerry was super equivocal. I mean, he said, I oppose the decision. I oppose gay marriage. While I support rights for gay people, and he ultimately came out in support of a constitutional amendment that would take the decision away. So I think it shows, as much as anything, how far, how far we had to go from that moment, from 2004 in Massachusetts, to hold on to the ruling in Massachusetts, and then to pick up more wins and to start building support
right.
Nationwide.
Yeah, and look where we are in 2015. It's not that many years after 2004. There's also a chapter in the book on President Obama and his, was it a change of heart on this issue, the importance of his coming out in support of marriage equality. We're speaking this hour with Mark Solomon, and Mark is the author of Winning Marriage, the inside story of how same-sex couples took on the politicians and pundits and won. I don't know how many conversations you've had about this, but I'll bet you've had more than a few. This issue you would have thought would have taken forever to be decided by this country, and look at where we are. It's entirely possible the Supreme Court will declare marriage equality the law of the land in 2015. But it was very strategically planned, and Mark will talk more about the strategy, and we'll welcome your phone calls as well. Feel free to give us a call. Our phone number, you may have your own thoughts about why this issue has moved through this country as rapidly as it has. So many states now supporting marriage equality, majority of the American people supporting marriage equality, and that certainly wasn't the case not that long ago. What happened? 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're also on Twitter @KDunnShow. Mark is the National Campaign Director for Freedom to Marry, where he directs programs to win marriage all over the country. He has worked on marriage equality for 13 years, starting leading the campaign in Massachusetts, where it was a lengthy battle, hard-fought battle, and also he's played key roles in states all over the country. So feel free to join our conversation. And before another moment goes by, I certainly want to thank all of you who contributed during our winter membership drive. We had more than 5,049 listeners pledge, including 1,561 sustaining pledges. And we are pleased to welcome 1,116 new members to WPR. You donated more than $744,000 to fund Wisconsin Public Radio programs that are important to you, and you are important to us as well. So thank you very much. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we are talking about marriage equality this hour. Please join our conversation. Why do you think that this has moved ahead as rapidly as it has? Do you think that it soon will be the law of the land? Are you happy about that? Perhaps you are a couple who has been able to get married, not in this state, but somewhere, and what that has meant. Did the strategy need to be, we'll talk about love. Did it need to be love? Well, we welcome your calls for our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're just tuning us in, Mark Solomon is our guest, and his book is Winning Marriage, The Inside Story of How Same-Sex Couples Took on the Politicians and Pundits and Won. He is the National Campaign Director for Freedom to Marry. Let's move into a conversation about what the message needs to be. I think you did polls of people and asked them what a key reason was for getting married. And for people, some people it was love. For the gay community, it tended to be, you know, a host of other reasons why they should be allowed to get married when, you know, love is the answer, right?
Yeah, that's exactly the case. What we found... So we've been losing ballot measure after ballot measure, including in Wisconsin, where we actually thought we had a chance of succeeding, and then we lost a big one in California in 2008. And so we really went back to looking carefully at how we were talking about marriage. And what we found was that when we polled straight voters and asked them why marriage was important to them, their number one answer was love and commitment. And when we asked them why they thought gay couples wanted to marry, their number one answer was that they didn't know. Mm. And then it was maybe benefits, and then maybe love and commitments. And we realized there was like a 40-point or so gap between, between the love and commitment that they knew that they had in their marriage, or that they viewed as important, most important, and what they thought was important to gay folks. So we needed to change that because we knew very well that gay people wanted to marry for the same reasons anyone else wants to marry. And if straight people didn't understand why same-sex couples wanted to marry, we'd never win. If they thought it was to sort of uproot marriage or change marriage or just to get a collection of benefits, we knew that wasn't enough for them to vote or to support legislators who would support our right to marry.
So how did you conduct a campaign that talked about love?
We just did it. but what we did is we highlighted, it's less talking about it and more the messengers are at least as important as the message, and it's showing. We used a lot of, a lot of parents, who have gay kids, adult kids, older parents who would talk about their own marriage. We've been together for 55 years, and our son is married to his wonderful wife, and our daughter told us she was a lesbian. And, initially we weren't comfortable with it, but once we got to know her partner, we knew that she deserved the same right to marry as our son did, and the same right to be happy. So it's connecting people to the emotion of empathy and of, the golden rule of treating others the way you want to be treated. Mm-hmm. And that's something you have to show people. And then, we did it a huge amount in, as we were talking about before, these one-on-one conversations all over the place, for couples and parents and children and, just across the board.
Mm-hmm. Let's say everybody think that this, can happen easily. Let's go back to Massachusetts, because you spend a good portion of the book talking about Massachusetts, where you won in court and then had to fight in Holy Toledo. Did you ever have to fight for 3.5 years to hold on to the decision? What decision did you win? Why did you have to fight?
Well, we won a decision by a 4-3 margin in the Supreme Court of Massachusetts, and you know, our opponents promised that they would take the decision away through a constitutional amendment, just like the one that was passed in Wisconsin. The difference was that in Massachusetts we had marriage and they would be actually taking it away. So, and because we were first, it was the focus of, you know, everybody in the country, meaning, you know, all of the interest groups and, you know, the Catholic hierarchy and the religious rights and, you know, some of the lead Republican operatives viewed this as an opportunity to motivate conservative voters to go out to the polls. And so we had to, you know, necessity is sort of the motherhood of invention, and we had to create a campaign that could, that could beat back all of these forces and make our case.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a course of 3.5 years, but we actually, you know, our threshold was really difficult. We had to get 3/4 of the legislature to vote our way in Massachusetts, and we just surpassed that number over, you know, after 3.5 years. So it was a long fight, and I'm happy to talk about what some of the key elements of.
Sure, please. Yes, go ahead.
So I'd say there are two major things that we needed to do. Number one is what we've been talking about some, which is making our case about why marriage is important to us, helping lawmakers and helping, you know, straight people understand why marriage matters so much to same-sex couples. And it wasn't something you could just tell them. It wasn't something that could happen in the state house. It had to happen in their districts from people who looked like them, sounded like them, they had some connection with, et cetera. And then we had to put together really smart political campaigns. And, you know, there's one truism about elected officials that I've learned over the past 10-plus years, which is that there's nothing more important to an elected official than continuing to be an elected official. And so that means that if you're asking an elected official to take a vote that they think is going to cost them their job, you're going to lose. And so we had to demonstrate that a vote for us, a vote for marriage equality, was not going to cost them their job, and, you know, in fact, was the smart political vote to take, in addition to being the right vote to take. That took a lot of political, electoral organizing, and we ended up reelecting every member of the legislature who voted our way in both 2004 and 2006. So we were 195 out of 195.
Isn't that amazing? So if they didn't vote for you, what were the consequences?
Well, you know, the truth is that most local elected officials, state legislators, you know, can hang on to their jobs for a pretty long time. At least that was the case in Massachusetts, and it's pretty much the case. It's the case in most states. So you can't just say, well, we're going to knock you out because you voted against us on this issue. But what you can do is you can look for people who are against you who are vulnerable for whatever set of reasons and try to make an example out of that lawmaker. And so we did that. We, you know, while we were 195 out of 195, we found a handful of lawmakers that we were able to defeat, including Democrats who took on more conservative Democrats who weren't with us on marriage and beat them in the Democratic primary. And that sent a huge message.
Yes.
Around the state.
And defeat through just door-to-door campaigning, defeat through money?
All of the above. It was grassroots work. I mean, my favorite one was this guy named Carl Shortino,
uh-huh.
Who was a 25-year-old guy who lived, who was headed up the gay group at Tufts University, met with his lawmaker, and his lawmaker just kept saying, you people this, you people that, and Carl was just really furious about it, and so he first went out and started talking to people who are involved in politics to see if he could get them to run, and he couldn't find anybody to run, so he's like, what the heck, I'm just going to do it myself. And he started knocking on doors. And when I first met the guy, I thought he was a really nice guy, but I was like, look, this, you know, I'm glad someone's doing this, but this is never going to happen. But then I saw his campaign plan, and I saw polling that showed that the guy he was running against, who was a member of leadership, was actually very vulnerable. And in the end, he beat the guy by 90 votes. And it was through door-to-door and through, you know, raising money and spending it on voter contact, on direct mail, and all that sort of, all that good local political stuff that you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, because you know the inside story here, people have wondered about the president's evolution on this issue and the importance of his coming out in favor of marriage equality. What was his evolution?
Well, I think to put it in context, you know, his, you know, when he ran for president, he was opposed to marriage equality. He said that he supported civil unions. And, you know, if you were to ask me, do I think of my heart of hearts that he really opposed marriage equality? Probably not. But I think that the more important issue is that he didn't, and really no mainstream Democrat viewed it as politically viable to take the position of being in support when he first started running for president. And so what we needed to do over the course of, you know, of several years was to push the center of gravity of our issue and also push him so that eventually, as quickly as possible, he could, you know, feel like it was a politically viable thing for him to do to support our cause.
Mm. So, and what difference did it make to the cause?
It made a huge difference.
Really?
So the president is one guy, but the presidency, more than anything, speaks as the official position of the country. So just from a cultural perspective, it made a really big difference. But and then there were some very specific things. Number one, when we won in court on the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, the ban on federal recognition of marriages, he implemented it just really assertively and made sure that you know he was implementing it as expansive and way as he could to include as many people as he could. And then the other thing that was really profound is that we saw support increase, particularly support among African Americans, increased after he came out in support, and that made a tremendous difference as well.
We do welcome phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Mark Solomon is our guest. His book is Winning Marriage, The Inside Story of How Same-Sex Couples Took on the Politicians and Won. Mark is the National Campaign Director for Freedom to Marry. He directs programs to win marriage nationwide, and he's been working on the issue of marriage equality for 13 years, leading the campaign in Massachusetts and being instrumental in campaigns in other states, New York, Illinois, Minnesota, Washington, California, New Hampshire, and other places. There, I'm sure, are some of you who have been involved in this movement as well. I guess the question that I ask you, that Mark has answered in his book, too, is in terms of changing people's minds and changing the law, this issue has moved through this country, I think, fairly rapidly. And it does appear that the Supreme Court will declare marriage equality to be the law of the land sometime in 2015. We'll ask Mark about his inside knowledge about when the court is likely to take that up. Why do you think that's the case? What strategies were used that were successful? We do have some people who are not in favor of this. We'll hear from a couple of you at the top here, but we certainly welcome your phone calls. Would love very much to hear from you. Let's start our calls with Kyle. Hi, Kyle.
Hi. I just wanted to say two comments. My first one is about the U.S. Constitution. In Article 1, it says that all legislative authority herein granted shall be vested in the Congress of the United States. So the Supreme Court has no authority to legislate. And then secondly, since all law is an imposition of morality or procedural to a moral cause, will the laws of the United States be based on the objective standard of the laws of nature's God as the Founding Fathers declared in the Declaration of Independence, or will it be the subjective standard of the majority as well? Thank you.
Go ahead, Mark.
Sure. One thing that's extremely clear and was part of the founding philosophy of our country is that the Constitution and our courts are to protect minorities of all kinds. And the 14th Amendment to the Constitution only strengthened strengthened those protections. And so what same-sex couples are asking for is that, we be allowed to participate in our society by being treated equally under the law in something as important as marriage, just as our straight brothers and sisters are. And I think that is a fully American request to be able to have our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So I obviously I don't agree with the caller's assessment. The other thing I'd say is that there are so many different faith traditions now that that support the freedom to marry as a tenet of their faith and as a part of their understanding of religion and tradition. So it is not a it's not monolithic in any way that faith speaks in one way or the other on this issue.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Let's talk about something we're waiting for the Supreme Court to do, and it could be any day now. What are your best thoughts about where they may go with this issue and when they're going to start hearings?
Yeah, so we don't know exactly when this is going to happen, but it's likely we'll be arguing before the Supreme Court this April, probably in late April, and very likely the court seems to wait on gay rights rulings for the very end, and that'll be in late June. And we do think we have a good chance of winning. Our track record since, over the past year and a half, we've now won 65 out of, I believe, 70 cases in federal and state courts on whether states are allowed to discriminate and ban same-sex couples from marriage. So, and those are both judges appointed by Republicans and Democrats, just across the board, really, pretty unanimous perspective. So we think we have a very strong legal case. We think the country, very importantly, we think the country is ready for national resolution. The justices don't make rulings in the abstract. They also look out at the country and make sure that the country is ready. And we are now at a place where we have 63% support nationwide, according to a CNN poll that came out a few days ago. Mm. 57% in the South, for
wow.
People under, yeah, it's, and it's, that's real culture change. And for mm-hmm. people under 50, we're at 70% support. So, I think the case is very clear that the country is ready.
More phone calls in a moment. Our guest this hour is the author of Winning Marriage, the inside story of how same-sex couples took on the politicians and pundits and won. Mark Solomon, 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Leave messages there. And we're on Twitter, at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're welcoming more phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. And our next caller is Ann in Campbellsport. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi.
I am just curious on how you feel the entertainment business contributed to the public sector's acceptance of gay people. And I mean, it just seemed like so many television shows, and I can't think of any name other than Modern Family, but they portrayed gay people, brought them into our homes, and I just think that broadened our opinions and prejudices against them. And do you think that's true also?
Sure. So you actually think it enhanced prejudices against gay people?
No, against gay people.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, so I think culture and entertainment had a really positive impact as well. I'd say this, though. I think that it goes hand in hand with where the country is. you know, if you remember however long ago it was when Ellen came out of the closet as lesbian and, you know, her show was canceled. And so I think that if networks thought that portraying gay characters would be a very unpopular thing to do, they wouldn't do it because they want to make money too. So I think it's in sync with where the country is, and it certainly contributes to it. And then as the country gets better, more people feel comfortable coming out and talking about who they are because they see people that reflect them on the television, and that, you know, it's sort of a cycle of progress.
Thank you, Ann, very much for your call. Becky and Nina, hi.
Hello. I have a comment, I guess. My husband and I discuss this a lot, and we feel that there's such a simple solution. And I guess I'm wondering why we seem to be the only ones that have figured it out. But when we got married, we're not a religious couple, and when we got married, we hired a justice of the peace, and we have a civil union. Why can't it just be legal for civil unions across the board? And if people are religious, then they have a marriage ceremony within their church or whatever faith they practice. I'll take a comment off the air.
Okay.
Sure. That's definitely something I've heard about a good amount. And, you know, I think the fact of the matter is that in this country, marriage is so deeply ingrained in our society. So the idea of ending, you know, civil marriage for straight people is just not going to fly. You know, if we were starting over from scratch and we were talking about, you know, do we want some sort of civil union license for straight couples and gay couples, and have marriage be in the province of the church and the synagogue, et cetera, that, you know, that might be, you know, that might be something worth pursuing. But given the fact that marriage is such a rite of passage in our society, not just in church, but in, you know, culturally, I think that, you know, it just makes sense that instead of really trying to do what the caller's talking about, simply allowing same-sex couples to marry too. What one of my colleagues likes to say is that there's no shortage of marriage licenses, and gay people aren't going to use them all up. So, yeah.
Thanks very much for your call. We mentioned Deval Patrick, the president, and the influence that he had when he changed his mind. Let's talk about some other people, too, because you pay them tribute in the book. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo took a leadership role in shepherding the bill through New York through a Republican-led legislature, wasn't it? That was no small feat.
Andrew Cuomo was really masterful in working with a Republican state Senate and a Democratic, and plenty of Democrats in the Senate as well, who didn't really want to see the bill passed, and just holding everybody's feet to the fire. I've never dealt with an elected official, you know, in that sort of way, where he wanted to just drive the strategy and lead it and, you know, get the thing done, or rather than, you know, in most cases, we're sort of asking elected officials to do things, and we know we have a few favors or a few things they'll do, but, you know, the number of things we can ask for is limited. With Cuomo, he wanted to drive it, and he is just extraordinarily skilled at, at persuading, at using all the different levers of power in a pretty sort of, I guess I'd say, unsavory state capital, Albany, New York.
Were there others that you wanted to make sure that you mentioned this hour?
Other
people who helped lead fight for you, who you thought were just key players?
Yeah, I think you mentioned a couple of them. To me, the ones who are just the most powerful, and it's the ones you talked about at the very beginning, are these couples who, you know, mm-hmm. So many of whom stepped out of their comfort zones because, you know, so many gay people and same-sex couples live their lives, have, with their heads down, not wanting to make waves because they didn't know how their community would respond. And then this vision of being able to marry came along, and it that, you know, was a big enough deal that they were willing to step out of their comfort zone and talk about their own relationship. And so when I think about who the heroes of this movement are, I think really about so many couples in, you know, living in rural parts of the country. And, you know, today, you know, I was in Oklahoma not too long ago and seeing some of the seeing some same-sex couples, meeting a bunch of couples who, you know, have lived their lives in Oklahoma and who are now finally seeing the freedom to marry come to them. Those are the real heroes from my vantage point. Mm.
Let's go to Jeff in Merrill next. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good afternoon. Say, there's a part of me that feels that we're actually heading in the wrong direction. You touched on this briefly with the last caller. But to me, marriage, as recognized by the government, is purely used for discriminatory purposes. And I'm not sure why we want to push for more government involvement in marriage. I think we should get marriage stricken from the government and have absolutely no recognition between any type of a contract between two individuals. And I thought, if I'll take it off the air, but that's my thought.
Okay.
Sure. So, I hear that, you know, I hear that idea from the caller, and you know, if that's a project that some folks want to take on to just get the government out of the marriage business altogether, they can give it a try. From my vantage point, marriage is such a key part of our society and. And sort of governs so much of the protections and benefits that the state gives us. And, that it's, you know, I just don't see that as a likely scenario. I don't see it happening. And so I think the right thing to do is to treat same-sex couples and opposite-sex couples equally and allow both to marry and, to get the dignity and respect from their communities and families and all of the protections that come along with marriage.
Everything okay in your house? I can't tell if that's an alarm or what.
Oh, no, it's just New York City sounds.
Oh, I've never heard that one before. Thanks very much, Jeff, for your call. Let's go next to Michael in Madison. Hi, Michael.
Yes, hi. My question, Kathleen, is this. What's ahead? If a Republican president or candidate wins the presidency, then... And a number of them have announced their opposition to same-sex marriage. If we have a Republican president and a Republican Congress, how does the effort proceed then?
So there's a very good chance that we will get a Supreme Court ruling, and we're hopeful it'll be a positive ruling before the next election in June of 2015, in which case it would be resolved, it would be the law of the land before the next the next presidential election. I honestly don't think that there is, I mean, first of all, I don't think there's much that these candidates can do or the next president could do. And second, more importantly, I don't think, given where the country is, given that we're at 63% support and it's only growing, for voters who vote Republican who are under 45, we now have a majority of them. I just don't think that that's the place where Republican candidates want to go, or where a Republican president would want to go at all.
You do feel as though the tide has changed here completely, and that maybe it's a viewed by many as a human rights issue now, and that once it's decided, it's just decided. It's just, that's the way things are now.
Yeah, it's. I think people view it as a as a constitutional guarantee. I think
yes.
What they've seen, what's most important is what they've seen is that it's fine. It's okay. It's a good thing. It's a good thing for Wisconsin. It's a good thing for America, for the nice couple that lives down the street to be able to get married and better take care of their family, and that it's not, and that it's not the threat that some, groups, some of these right-wing groups predicted it would be. It just hasn't come to pass.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mark, so much for being with us. Enjoyed the hour. Thanks.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Mark Solomon, the book is Winning Marriage, the inside story of how same-sex couples took on the politicians and pundits and won. Tomorrow, during our 1 o'clock hour, Steve Brill, America's Bitter Pill is his book. It looks at the Affordable Care Act, how it was written and implemented. He also looks at spending in the American healthcare system and writes about navigating the system himself. While he was writing the book, he was going through open-heart surgery. So that's hour number two. Hour two, all the weather again this winter. Is it a sign of a changing weather pattern due to warming? We'll talk about that issue with an important scientist. Thanks for listening today.